Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much for having me on, and I'm excited to talk baseball, talk anything again. So, appreciate it.
Yeah, this is I'm workshopping you for spring training. You get ready, you're pitching, you're preparing, and you also have to do interviews. So this is, yeah. we're all workshopping, because now you have the opportunity to be in a major league camp, which is a very, very real thing. So to set the scene, Mike, we talked last year, when you were with Syracuse, sat down. It was always, for the first time I met you was actually at the Futures game, and that was obviously in the New York Mets system. Now you are a Tampa Bay Ray, and the reason for that is because you were taken in the Rule 5 draft, which I always find fascinating. That's why I say you're going to be in a major league camp. You get major league per diem, my friend. Congratulations. There you go.
Thank you.
I mean, it's cool though. Like, listen, I mean, we're going to talk about the Rule 5 thing, but you've now gotten ready for a few different spring trainings. This one's a complete different ball of wax, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about the day of the Rule 5.
Yeah.
But, obviously it's my first time being with a new team. I'd only known the Mets. I guess I'm going from one port to the other, Port St. Lucie to Port Charlotte. But I actually know a handful of guys with the Rays that were once Mets, which is funny, which will be nice to know, people, but it is very exciting. I'm very excited. It's going to be awesome. Very excited to be with the Rays and.
Okay. So there's a few different things. You know, we're going to talk about the Mets and the Rays and the Rays. If you're going to go to a place that say, hey, you're going to get the most out of a pitcher, the Rays aren't a bad place to go to. But let's talk about what you said. Let's not bury the lead here. Part of the deliciousness of the Rule 5, of being a Rule 5 pick, is that day, is leading up to that day, because of all the uncertainties when it comes to a baseball player, it is I would imagine it was wild, right? Because you know you're Rule 5 eligible. People, I guess, do Rule 5 mock drafts. But just take me through that day leading up to the Rule 5 draft, where you were, what your feelings were, how you felt, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Rule 5 draft is awesome, both major and minor league, if you kind of follow the way just it works. But in general, I mean, I really didn't know what to expect. I was hoping, like, hey, maybe there's a team out there that, you know, thinks I can crack their major league roster and help them win. You know, now who that was, I had no idea. You know, my agent was very upfront and honest with me. He's like, hey, look, this could go a number of ways. And same thing about the prior, protection deadline, with the 40 man stuff. And, you know, going into the day, it felt kind of like it did on draft day, but not really, because you knew that, you know, there's not, however many picks there are now, you know, whatever there are for day one, two, and three, there's probably only going to be like 10 to 15 guys in a huge pool of people to get drafted. So in my mind, I was like, you know what? I'm going back to, you know, AAA with the Mets, whatever. Like that was my mindset. And in this part, I will never forget, they did live stream it on, MLB.com. So I'm listening in and, you know, all these teams, it's either draft or pass. And they're having guys come up to the microphone. And so they call the Phillies, and the Phillies guy walks up and he goes, this is all I remember, have selected right-handed pitcher Mike Vassell. And from that moment, I almost dropped my phone. I was like, what is going on? I was freaking out. Within 5 minutes, everyone who was following you know, coaches, family members, whatever, blowing up my phone, all this stuff. And then I was actually in a baseball facility when it happened. And the best part is 10 minutes after that, my buddy checks Twitter. He goes, I don't think you're going to the Phillies. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, a guy just tweeted out, you might be on the move. I was like, oh my God, what is going on? So then I'm texting people trying to figure it out. The Mets call me and they say, you know what? You're probably getting traded. And they called me back and they said the pick is being traded to Tampa Bay. And I mean, I was obviously equally, if just through the roof, very excited. And then Tampa called and it was honestly a great day. And it really hadn't settled in until about the next week. I was like, this is weird. You know, like all of a sudden I'm just like, poof, gone. You know, but it was crazy. And it was an awesome day. Awesome day.
Well, so when you say it settled in, I mean, that's part of it. It's like you're going through, well, you know how the Rule 5 works, right?
Where, yeah.
In case people don't know, I'll clarify that. If you get picked in the Rule 5 draft, then you go to the camp with that team and you have until opening day to make the major league roster. If you don't make it, you usually get sent back to the team that you came from. So you could still end up back with the Mets.
Yeah.
Or sometime they work a deal so they can keep you or whatever it is. But really it is a great opportunity to show teams that you're major league ready. Like you pitched in AAA last year. You've always been a top prospect. You're not that far from the major leagues. And now you're going to an organization, the Rays, as I said before, Mike. I mean, this is the ultimate. We are going to unlock the secret sauce organization. I don't know if that part of it hits home for you at all. Like the team that you're going to.
Yeah, no, I think that was one of the things that probably hit first was like, you know, and what's great about was, and I really haven't started obviously yet. I've communicated with the Rays, but I haven't really, you know, gotten into the trenches of what they do, which I'm very excited to do. But it's always interesting because like when you're a player on the outside talking about guys the Rays have and you see them and whether it's their bullpen arms or their starting rotation, you're like, how do they keep doing this? Like, what is going on? And you see it. We play them. I played them in high A, played them a lot in triple A. We missed them in the double A league. That doesn't really overlap. But, you know, then you all of a sudden are like, whoa, I'm going to this place that, you know, it seems like unlocks hidden potential in everyone. And that's what I'm most excited about because it's like, you know, you like to think of yourself as a little bit special. Well, I do something cool that Tampa likes, you know, but yeah, I'm really, really excited for that. And they obviously have an amazing track record with pitchers and they, whatever they do, and I'm excited to find out it works. So.
Okay. So what is your, what do you perceive your best pitch to be?
So yeah, I have a feeling I know where this is going.
Yeah. Well, I listen. And the reason, let me just say this. The reason I say this is because we've had on Kyle Snyder, the pitching coach, multiple times every single season, right? I've had on pitchers a lot. This was honestly one of my favorite subjects and I've probably worn it out because I remember talking to Jake Diekman, a guy who had been to a lot of organizations, had a little bit problems with control. He goes to the Rays and he said, when you hear it from the Rays, it hits different. And sure enough, boom, he has a great tenure there. You have, you know, there's been plenty of other guys, but the reason I asked that, and you probably know. Well, first, tell me what your best pitch is.
So, if I'm facing a righty, I would probably say it's my slider. Like, you know, whether I did add a sweeper this past year, and by the end of the year, the shape was great. So, whether it's my hard slider and or cutter and sweeper combined, and we work on that for sure. And then the lefties, you know, I don't throw it a ton, but I feel my curveball is great. It's performed amazing throughout, you know, the minor leagues. I just don't throw it enough. And that's even something I've worked on this offseason is actually throwing that more. So I know where you're going with
this. Yeah. Well, because you know what it is. And they'll tell you, they actually roll their eyes. They roll their eyes. They're like, there's not the secret sauce thing is like, this is the catchphrase with all things Rays. And they'll tell you, you know what it is? It's throwing your best pitch over the plate for strike one and prioritizing that pitch. And I remember talking to Kevin Cash about this. He said, watch where our catcher's set up. And I don't know if you noticed this in the minor leagues with them.
Yeah.
But it's for the most part, not always, but it's okay here, right in the middle of the plate. That's it. Best pitch right here. Strike one. Let's go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've seen it. I saw it a lot at the major league level. Whenever you – and it's actually a thing that I feel like is catching on, or teams are at least trying to follow that blueprint of, you know, with the Mets we call it like power of the middle. You know, like letting your best stuff just rip down the middle of the plate because – based off the average miss and everything. And, but you're right. It's like sometimes you have to actually commit to throwing a pitch down the middle. Cause even in your, in the back of your mind, even if you know you have to throw a strike 0-0 or 1-0 or whatever it is, like you need to get something in the zone to get ahead or get back in the count. You never actually want to give the guy just a cookie right down the middle. So that for me is like, I've had those moments where I'm like, I'm just going to let it go right down the middle. And I feel like it works. And then other days, it's like, I need to almost get out of the zone. So, you know, it is something though that I know a lot of people really love. And, but I know the Rays, however they communicate it, I think
that's another, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Because again, I'll go back to what Diekman said. He said, when you hear it, the way that they phrase it, also the fact that they have the track record, the communication of it is a powerful, powerful thing. And I'm really interested. You said you had made mention of your curveball. Said, I think I have a good curveball, right?
Yeah.
And almost, and I have no idea if they're going to say this, but to me, what that reeks of, they're going to sit you in that room for the first time and say, you know what we noticed? We noticed you have a pretty good curveball. You just need to throw it more. You know, I don't know. I don't want to get in your head that way, but I'm
just, no, I know. Well, that's what I'm excited because I've even had friends throughout the, you know, buddies you meet through baseball or whatever. And, you know, they joke around with me after the race thing of like, oh, you do something that's different. And I'm like, well, it might not even be that I'm different. Maybe there's just something I can do well, or I don't do enough that I've done in the past, you know, and I think you're so right about like communication. And that's what I've heard from so many people. I've played with guys who have gone through Tampa Bay, big leagues, minor leagues, whatever it is. And they said, you know, whatever they do, I guess they're just like the pitching whisperers with the way they can do things and communicate and everything. So,
you know, and I also feel every once in a while during the middle of the year, I'll look up Rule 5 guys, how the Rule 5 guys are doing. And I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like in the last couple of years that teams have hit on more Rule 5 guys than ever before. And again, I'm doing this on the fly here. I'm just thinking through it. For me, I've watched Garrett Whitlock, Justin Slayton, you know, these guys being really, really good out of the gate. Oakland hit on one.
Mitch Spence. Yeah.
And so maybe it's one of these things where because of the information, because maybe we should look at Rule 5 differently because there is, it used to be like, oh, well, maybe, or you have to stash a guy. You'll have to get 15 million injuries, you know, to get through the season to stay with the organization. Yeah. But now guys are coming legit helping.
Yeah, I know, you know, and I always wonder that too. And I've thought about, you know, and this could be total shot in the dark, but I wonder how sometimes the ABS system has affected AAA numbers at times compared to like now to maybe how it used to be and how that affects guys coming from AA to AAA. Cause I know there's been a lot of guys that have a ton of talent that'll come to AAA. And even if it's a start or two, they'll be like, that zone is crazy. And you're like, yeah, I know. And you'll see it's so I've always wondered, you know, like maybe it's something else that's going on or, you know, inflated numbers for whatever reason, one way or the other, you know, but you're right. I think there's probably, or maybe the game and just development overall is just getting a lot better. And now there's just even more number of just really good baseball players.
Well, I think there's so many examples, Mike, of guys, not only Rule 5 guys, but maybe guys who haven't had success somewhere. And then a team will say, I see this, and we're going to – the example that we always give, and Dodgers, as good as the Rays are, the Dodgers are sort of the next level. There's so many examples of this. Ryan Brazier is the guy that sort of we have defaulted to the last couple of years. He gets DFA'd by the Red Sox, and the Dodgers pick him up, say, we see that – we think that you can throw a cutter, go to Arizona, learn a cutter for 10 days, a pitch that really you hadn't thrown. He learns the cutter. Next thing you know, he has like a 1 ERA and for the rest of the year. And then obviously wins a World Series last year. I mean, that's one example. But I do feel like what is happening is that they're seeing, and this comes back to me asking your best pitch, they're seeing one thing or two things. Not like, oh, well, look at, we think he has all these pitches. He's got a live arm and all that. No, we see this one thing, and we really, really think we can dig in on this and make this guy into something.
I don't know. No, I know. The idea of having one outlier pitch, I feel like, is very prevalent right now in baseball. Like, I've played with guys who, especially at AAA, because AAA, you'll get guys who will sign on with a team. They'll have an opt-out by a certain date, especially more so with relievers. But they always, a lot of these guys say, like, I've had teammates have been like, I'm around because I still have an unbelievable slider. They're like, you know, my fastball is not good anymore, but my slider is great. And a team will see that, and, you know, there's value in a guy like that who has a pitch that's like an outlier pitch, because teams will say, just throw it over and over and over again, or throw it for, you know, strike one and strike two, and then we can figure something out for whatever. But it's very interesting. A lot of guys will have good stuff, but then one pitch especially will just be way better than the rest.
Yeah, but so it becomes like, why are you throwing this other stuff? It's mediocre when you can throw this stuff is really, really good. So we'll go back to AAA. And you had an up and down year, but the great thing about it is a year like that allows you to first of all, you've landed in a good place. Like, really, like, this is as frustrating of a year as you might have had in AAA. You've landed in a great opportunity, and not only because you get major league per diem in spring training. It's the best. put it in an envelope. There's also like this tons of lessons that you can learn. I mean, I remember when we sat down and talked, you had a slow start. You had figured something out. You felt like you were on a run. You had a pretty good run. And I would imagine that you learned a ton about yourself last year, probably more than you had in your entirety of your professional career. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
But
what are some of the things that you learned about yourself last year?
You know, I struggled before, but I think the difference between last year and different years in general is, like, you get to a certain point, I feel like, and especially coming up through the minor leagues, is like, if you're in AAA within the first two seasons, I feel like up until then, you might have had a bad start or a couple bad starts, but you seem to always figure it out quick. I think one of the things I realized is that, like, what is a plan and what is a process? Like, what are those things and how do they apply to me? You know, because I like to think I'm a guy that, yes, I'm talented, but a lot of the things I can do are because I've experienced and failed and learned and gotten better, not just off of pure talent. Obviously, everybody in the major leagues and all levels of professional baseball are extremely talented, but you know, I was never, even at a younger age, one of these guys that was just head and shoulders better than everybody else. I feel like I failed, I learned, and then I got better at whatever I didn't do well. And I think last year, when you fail so many times in a row, and it doesn't really make sense, and then you almost like ask for help or just, you know, talk to guys about like, hey, like, what's going on right now? And then I learned what is a plan, what is a process, and what does that look like? I realized, you know, the result's going to be the result. At some point, this game, as easy as it may seem at times, is really, really hard, and it can be really hard. So if you have something to fall back to of, okay, I didn't have a good outing. Well, was I getting ahead in the count? Were the first three pitches of the at bat strikes? With two strikes, was I executing? You know, like start looking at these things and truly learning how to pitch. I think that's when it was like when we talked last and I was on a really good run and I just kind of ran out of steam at the end of the year, but I really started to understand, okay, what is pitching and how do I almost want my off season to look like too? And that's what I'm really, really excited about heading into this year because I finally feel like I had an off season where it was really pitching focused. Like, yes, did I get my workouts in and do all that stuff 100%, but I really stayed almost in the zone that I would like in season of every time I'm throwing, every time I'm doing this, like, what would the best of the best look like doing this? And I had the opportunity to play with some guys who were incredible and be coached by some incredible people. And that's what I learned. And that's what I'm really happy about because, you know, those are the things that matter. And I hear it time and time again, or had heard it, you know, plan, process, all this stuff. And it didn't really make sense. And I was like, oh, so that's what it looks like. You know, that's what I can fall back to or, you know, on or prepare for a day. Like that's why these guys are more prepared than other people because they put the time in and a lot of it is honestly upstairs. You know, it's not all physical. Like a lot of the time these guys are just such, I want to say like mental warriors that they can go out and do it every 5-6 days or if they're a reliever, they can go back to back days and be lights out both nights in a row. So.
Well, and that's, there's a lot that is popping to my mind, but one of the things you talk about being around a lot of good players and a lot of good coaches, you know, this is another benefit from being a Rule 5 player. I mean, I've seen this a couple times, but, you know, I just remember, you know, when Garrett Whitlock was a Rule 5 guy, I remember when Justin Slayton was a Rule 5 guy, being around them and being them able to be in a major league clubhouse, being around not only the major league coaching staff, but major league pitchers to talk about that process, to talk about going through that stuff, to be able to sit there in spring training is there's a lot of downtime, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of downtime. Have you pitched, did you ever pitch in a Grapefruit League game at all or?
Yeah, I pitched in one last year against the Marlins and then 2023, I faced the Braves over in Northport in 2023.
Man, they made you go to Northport from Port St. Lucie.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I like you said, I got the one day of Major League per diem for that trip. So
oh,
I was
the
not,
best.
I was not complaining.
No. But and that's what happens is that you like a guy like yourself, you're in minor league camp and you get the word, hey, guess what? Tomorrow we're going to need you. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And, but this isn't like that. This is, you're in that clubhouse. You have a locker. You're sitting next to these other guys who, Pepio, for instance, like we've interviewed him. Like this is a guy who came from the Dodgers system who is a fascinating guy to talk to. There's other guys that you're going to be able to sit in that major league clubhouse, even in downtime, and pick the brains of these people. And that's an awesome thing. One question I have, like going back to last year, was who was maybe the – well, no, I take it back. I want to ask this question. Everyone pause. I reset. Because a lot of things are popping in my head. But one of the things I wanted to ask was, you know, David Stearns takes over. And it's a new regime. The Mets have a lot of success. For you have already been in the organization. Maybe there was no difference, but did you see it sometimes when you have this new regime come in? There is a difference, even in the minor league level. Did you see a difference?
Yeah, you know, I think so. To even backtrack further, I think I remember distinctly in 2021. My draft class, we had a Zoom and they told us on this Zoom, this is the first new draft class of like the new Mets player development era. And I remember like being like, oh, it's cool, whatever. And like being excited. But then when you look now at that draft class and kind of who was in there, and we actually didn't even sign our first round pick, who was Kumar Rocker. From that year. But you know, you got Carson Seymour, who's on the 40 man for the Giants now. He was just protected. Keyshawn Askew is with the Rays. And he crushed it last year in Double A. Christian Scott, who's a starter for the Mets now, Dom Hamill, Nathan Lavender, who's also a Rule 5 pick with me,
yep.
Grant Hartwig, who is in the big league. So you look back and you think, like, just that draft class alone, and then the year after that and the year after that, the amount of talent they developed, I think the kind of change of the regime, yes, you saw some things that were different, but they also had started this whole new player development kind of era and started it from the moment we got drafted. But I think the number one thing that probably stood out to me is it seemed like there was just a very, very high standard for, which is a good thing, for like what is success. And I think it pushed, we got pushed probably harder in terms of, you know, it's not just like you have a good month or this, that, or the other thing. Like getting the big leagues is hard, but like you need to be a very good player. So I think you saw, the guys that did go up and contribute to the team had a lot of success because they were very ready, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's probably a big reason as to why they made the NLCS last year is because, you know, they have a very high standard for what success is. And, you know, I think not that there wasn't the year prior, but obviously in 2023, that roster was loaded with talent, you know, mm-hmm. so I don't think the minor leagues was necessarily viewed as going to contribute as much, but last year, obviously, the farm system, especially that Syracuse team, guys that went up and down and helped that team helped a ton. You know, but other than that, you know, analytically, I feel like we're just along is the same and, mm-hmm. and other things. You know, and there wasn't a ton of difference, I feel. Not a ton. But there were small things here or there, but nothing that was like, whoa, this is a whole new team, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
I mean, that, you rattle off that draft class. That's not common. Like,
no.
That is, and it's not even to say they go, well, you know, you don't have to say all these guys are starring in the major leagues. The fact that they're on 40-man rosters, the fact that some of them have been in the major leagues, the fact that some of them have opportunities to be in the major leagues this year, that's not common to have, especially for one position. Like,
yeah.
You said like seven guys, and if you get seven guys in an entire draft to be in those positions, that's pretty good. So,
yeah.
Is it the same? I should know this. Is it the same, scouting department?
I believe so. Amateur scouting wise, I believe there's a lot of people that are still there. Mm. I think there's been a few pieces that have moved, but I think for the most part, pretty much the same group that drafted us, that drafted, like guys like Blade Tidwell and then, Brandon Sproat. Like, I think it's pretty much been the same core group of guys having these drafts, year after year. So
did you think, to go back to that, did you think you were going to be drafted by the Mets? Now, you went to the University of Virginia, obviously a Northeast kid, which is always, you know, you're two steps behind everybody as a Northeast kid.
But,
go ahead.
I don't know. The funny thing is I didn't remember having a ton of communication with the Mets. I do remember them calling and reaching out and, you know, the area scout that had drafted me, we still stay in touch and he's a great guy. But you know, I didn't think when I was getting drafted, I don't think there was really any team in mind. I think I just wanted to get into like just get drafted period. But, you know, yeah, I definitely was a little more surprised that I got drafted by the Mets than anyone else.
When, you and I probably share this. We went to our first major league game, ballpark game at the same ballpark, right? Did you go to, what was your first major league game you ever walked into as a kid?
Well, Fenway Park.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I like asking that question because I can relate. It's like when, how old were you?
Ooh, I want to say I was young, four maybe.
Well,
four or five.
It's, and you know, we've talked a lot about this. I've talked a lot about with celebrities in St. Louis, everything. And what you remember is the green, and I remember this distinctly, walking up the ramp You know,
yeah,
the green
yeah.
is never, the green is the, was the greenest I've ever seen a green, and the whites on the uniforms were the whitest I've ever seen a white, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I will, my first game, it's very, I remember more games after that, but I do remember my first game being fascinated with like the velocity the pitchers were throwing and just like a lot of the time paying attention to like a lot of the guys in the bullpen warming up, like just being fascinated with things like now that I guess since I do it, I'm a little more numb to it, but I'll never forget that kind of day or leading up to it and just walking into the ballpark, the amount of people and yeah.
Well, did I remember right? You said you went to playoff games.
I was at,
you were at the Ortiz game?
I was.
In case people don't know, the Ortiz game I'm talking about is game two of the American League Championship Series against the Detroit Tigers to 2013. David Ortiz hits a grand slam to tie the game. In the eighth inning, I believe, which I proclaim the most impactful hit in Red Sox history. And you were there.
I was there. Like, I was actually thinking about this probably a couple weeks ago. I was driving by Fenway. And, like, anytime I'll drive by, it'll be like, I'll remember whatever. But, you know, if I'm on the Mass Pike or something like that. But I actually thought of that moment 2 weeks ago and thinking about how now I could have the opportunity to play at Fenway Park. And I was thinking about how that moment right there was probably the moment I decided or, like, as a kid was like, this is the coolest thing in my life. I want to do this. Like, I don't know what I need to do, but, like, that moment right there, and I still get goosebumps to this day thinking about it, because that was the coolest and loudest and best experience I've probably ever had as a fan, at least, in a baseball park, hands down, like, ever.
And you were how old?
13? I was 12. No, I was 13. I was 13.
You were 13.
Yeah. 13. Yeah.
I mean, that's such a, it's awesome. Not only that it's awesome that you were there, that's great. I mean, it's awesome. Unbelievable moment, unbelievable crowd, everything about it. But it's also you can define that moment where you say that was sort of my fork in the road. Like, because I'm sure that you were good in Little League. I'm sure you were good, you know, leading up to that. But say, hey, this is going to be my passion, right?
Yeah. It was just like it was just such a. And then everybody, I feel like from that game, forgets about the Salt of La Macchia walk-off as well. Yeah. Like, that was also insane. But, you know, it was just the moment I remember that, for me, I loved baseball. But the fact I could be there and experience that almost energy in Fenway Park, for me, I was like, there's no way there's anything else in this world that can be as cool as this.
Were you back home when the Mets were going through their run, their playoff run?
This past season?
Yeah.
Which was also crazy to watch as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact is, and you made mention of it, they had a lot of guys that you played with that year contributing, including the guy who you basically became partly responsible for him becoming a record, like, star, a music star. In case people did miss this, that's what I do remember about our conversation.
Yeah.
You were the guy, the initial car ride with Julio Iglesias, Jose Iglesias, where he was basically, he was workshopping his OMG song with you.
Every day.
But you were the guy he was workshopping it with. I feel like you were the guy he was saying, you could have said, Jose, man, this thing sucks. This sucked.
Yeah.
We would never heard it.
Yeah. But the funny part about it too, I said, I remember one time telling him, I said, Jose, this song will be a hit. Whoever likes country music the most on this team, like that is their bread and butter. Like that is what they, I said, if they like this song, it will be a hit. And he said, so if that guy, you know, whoever that, I don't even know who we picked or who he picked to play it for. But I said, if that guy remotely likes this song, it's going to be good. Because all he listens to is, and then after that, I mean, it is truly insane. We were texting like a month ago, and he sent me a voice message, and he finished the voice message off with, "Oh my God." And I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." You know?
Yeah, man. He was relentless in his promotion.
He's still loving it.
I saw him, you know, it was great to see him and covering the postseason at every step of the way. And I remember him saying, like, this is when the release is going to be of well, he said there was going to be a remix, right? He couldn't tell who it was. And then he found out it was going to be Pitbull. Yeah. So this was the big deal. It's going to be a Pitbull. And Mike, it could have gone really bad if, you know, all of a sudden they don't win some of those games that are incredible wins. And all of a sudden, like, oh, by the way, I'm dropping my OMG song with Pitbull. But it timed out perfect. I mean, it was, the cloud.
Honestly, that was part of the reason, or just that song and everything that went on. I was like, they literally might just, like, I think they're going to go all the way. Like, they have everything that's going for them. The song, the winning. But he's a great guy. That's another guy that I used to pick his brain and talk baseball with all the time. Nobody likes talking baseball more than him. I think mm-hmm. he's a really, really great guy.
So when you look back at the Mets, listen, you could end up back there. I'm not, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could happen. Who knows? I hope you don't. And nothing against the Mets. I love Dickie Scott.
Yeah.
You talk about a guy who was like old school, like, hey, get the crap done. Let's go. You want to make the major leagues.
Yeah.
Who's the manager of the Syracuse team. But, you know, I hope you don't. But you could end up back there. I mean, and if you do, that's fine too. Because if you produce, you produce. You're still a very young man, still a very young pitcher. And I am just excited for you to experience the major league per diem.
It is, yeah. I remember guys going to big league camp and talking about it. And I don't even think it's just the per diem too. It's probably also the quality of food. They're like, they're giving us this money to eat, but they're also giving us this quality of food that, you know, why do we also, I mean, I'm not complaining. I think it's great, but you know,
you put it in an envelope. If you can put that money in an envelope, that's it. I mean, because people should understand minor league baseball is great. You get to play baseball, you get to get paid for it, but you're getting like box lunches. You're not getting the same.
It's not the quality of food. And this is like a universal thing.
Yeah.
It's just not the same. Now, I will say, I don't know any other minor league system. I will say the Mets food all around was actually pretty good. But there was probably a little difference. Big little difference between the major and minor league side.
Yeah, have you found a place to stay, which is another challenging thing when you're...
I have. It was a little bit of a process, but I...
Yeah, because people that are usually the minor leaguers, they get herded into a hotel a lot of times. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to... Again, this is all workshopping for a very exciting couple months.
Yeah.
It's good. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I look forward to seeing you pitch. I'm going to see you pitch multiple times, I would imagine, because I will be stationed primarily in Fort Myers, and Port Charlotte is one of the teams near Fort Myers.
We're right nearby.
Yeah, we're right nearby. But congratulations on everything, and it's good. Keep that smile on your face. It's a good time.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate it.